This is Sarah Reif with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Today we'll hear from Annika Williams, who was born in Elk in 1975 on a 10-acre parcel her parents bought for $10,000. She recalls life in the wooden castle, her one-of-a-kind outlaw father, and sometimes feeling like the Beverly Hillbillies with laughter and clear-eyed affection. Her father and some of his contemporaries have passed away, and their children are heading into middle age. Things just seem so much tamer now.
My parents met in Elk in the late 60s. My dad was English and trying to escape the sort of uptight English culture. He was a beatnik first, traveled across the U.S. to get to California, of course was in San Francisco, and then my mom grew up in the East Bay, you know, sort of suburban. Well, not super normal. Her parents were communists, so, you know, this wasn't like Leave It to Beaver by any means. But they both ended up in Elk and met, and my mom rented a place on the coast for like $60 a month or something, and she had a, rumor has it that she had a housewarming party, and my dad came with his tarot cards in hand and never left. So that was the beginning of their relationship. And then I don't know, maybe a year later my sister came along after their hippie wedding. Yeah, and then just like the other Back to the Landers, they looked for land to buy, and things were cheap back then. It was about $1,000 an acre. So they found a spot. It was 20 acres that they shared with, we shared with our neighbors, Ed and Sandy Bird. We have 10, they had 10. And my dad's English family, they had a garment and underwear factory. They sold the factory, and my dad got a cut, and they bought their 10 acres for $10,000. And so one of the original names for the land was Underwear Acres. And I guess the idea was they were going to fly a pair of underwear on a flagpole, but that never happened.
So tell me about the house that you grew up in.
They started out in just a cabin, and my sister, she was a baby there. Kerosene lamps, no electricity, outhouse. There's a picture of my dad coming down the outhouse hill, stark naked, you know, because, yeah, that's what you did. And then, so my dad was dragging his feet, building the main house. So, you know, and I was coming along pretty soon. We're about 4 years apart, my sister and I. So my mom's like, okay, let's finish the house so that, you know, we can expand the family, because the cabin was pretty small and cold. And So they finally finished the house, moved in. There were still, like, plastic on the walls and windows, and it still wasn't totally together. And I guess they didn't have plumbing in the house for quite a while. There was, a garden hose coming through the front, through the kitchen window. That was, like, the kitchen sink for a while. No hot water heater. So we had a cook stove, one of those old like Occidental cook stoves with the oven and then like a little warming thing on the top, and pipes coming in to heat the water for showers, and the shower was out on the back porch, of course. So it was like that for, I want to say, like the first 16, 17 years of my life. It just definitely made you appreciate what you had. You know, you didn't really whine about stuff, you know, like stuff that other people whine about, like little things. It was like, okay, yeah, I've got to light the stove, keep it burning for an hour before I can take a shower. You know, it's raining and hailing outside and the wind's blowing and you're out freezing your ass off trying to take a shower. The water may or may not be hot, you know. It kind of made us tough, I guess, like having to kind of work for what you got. But, you know, we had a lot of freedom growing up, a lot of freedom. Like, us and the neighbor kids would hook up and we would roam all around the countryside all day long, like making forts in the woods and fighting and skinning knees and, you know, having a great time. And there was no adult like hovering around to mitigate or anything like that. So it was just, it's kind of like Lord of the Flies, I guess. I don't know. Like, but when we would come home when it was dark and we were hungry, you know, there was nobody like calling us in, you know, it's like, see ya, you know, and it was great, like, just to have that freedom and that independence. It really kind of made you grow up quicker, you know, like, there was no adult really around to help us do stuff. We just did everything ourselves, you know, like, if we needed something moved, we would do it ourselves, you know. It was like, just the way it was. I mean, later when I was a teenager, I was thinking, thinking back, that it probably would have been good to have more boundaries, I want to say, like more parental supervision or input or something. But since we'd been rogue for so long, it's kind of like...
Can you remember any specific games that you played when you were a kid?
Yeah, we used to set up a hotel for some reason, because of course, you know, we were in the middle of nowhere and you'd need a place to stay if you were traveling through. So we had an old sink and we would set that up in our redwood fort, and we had a hotel with, and one of the stumps was like a desk. That was one of them. And then Tonka trucks, we had those old metal Tonka trucks, they're still resting in the front yard. And we used to, you know, build roads, because one of our favorite things to do when we were kids was to ride the bulldozer up the hill with Don Pardini. He was he's still around, an old timer in Anderson Valley, but he used to give us rides up the hill on his his bulldozer when he was doing our roads. So that was like huge thrill. So I mean, it was great when you're a kid. You didn't really realize how kind of isolated you were until you became a teenager, and then you were like, wow, oh, you run out of things to do. Starts kind of spinning your wheels, and end up moving to San Francisco when I was like almost 18. And then you really realize how different your upbringing has been when you move somewhere else and you talk to other people who don't have weird hippie names and outhouses and parents that grow pot for a living. Like, then you really realize, wow, okay, it's pretty different. But yeah, I remember feeling a little bit like, you know, kind of like the Beverly Hillbillies sometimes, you know, because we'd roll up, we'd have like dirty kid, ripped jeans, pants that were too short, you know. But in Mendo, it was, everybody just gets along, you know, the rednecks and the hippies and the tourists or whatever. Yeah, and then both my parents were big travelers, so that helped us, I think, too, and made us a little bit different, too, because we were, half my family lives in England, and then my mom's mother's Dutch, so we have that European connection, too, which I think kind of helped us not be too insular or provincial or something. I don't know.
So what was a moment for you when you really realized that your upbringing had been different from most people's upbringing?
When I first moved to the city, I was 17, almost 18, and I was trying to make eye contact with people on the streets and say hi. But of course, it's the city, and San Francisco is a pretty soft city. It's not like New York, of course, but it was like, wow, okay, this is a different world, because, you know, in Mendo, everybody's just friendly. And but of course, all the homeless people were really friendly, so I made friends with them. And we used to walk down the streets with other friends, and they'd be like, this guy named Cowboy or something that I'd made friends with, he's like, oh, hey, Annika. And they'd be like, you know him? It's like, that was one of the moments. And then just hearing other people talk about their childhoods, and their conservative parents, and this one friend moved up from LA, and her parents were really concerned about her because she was starting to recycle. Like, that was a bad thing. I was like, whoa, and not being able to relate to people about TV that they watched when they were kids, because we had a TV, but we were mostly outside running around making forts and stuff, and we didn't sit around watching TV. And of course, that is going to lead me to my mom's favorite story, which I'm sure she'll tell you. It's a beautiful sunny day. My parents are downstairs. The TV was way up on the top of the house. Like, the house has just got bigger and bigger. It's four stories. And I guess my dad wanted to make like a wooden castle. But so we're up there, beautiful sunny day. The TV, black and white, is on a round of wood, you know. That was the table. And so we're watching TV, and I guess my parents had some friends over, and they were doing acid, you know, as you do, right? And so my mom decides we shouldn't be watching TV, so she comes up the stairs, she rips the TV out of the wall, chucks it off the balcony, it crashes on the ground, four stories down on the ground, explodes. So, yeah, we were traumatized. My brother and I were like in tears. Like, this is one of my mom's proudest moments of her life, right? So we go up to my sister, who's at the neighbor's house. And my sister spent a lot of time at the neighbor's house. I guess she wanted a more kind of normal family. I mean, they were hippies too, but they weren't quite as hippie. I don't know. Yeah, so that ended our TV watching for a bit. And then my mom got arrested for political activism. And while she was in jail, my dad got a color TV. So we actually... it all ended up, you know, we upgraded in the end, so it was all fine.
So, tell me more about the wooden castle.
So my parents both built the house together, and then other people helped. I guess that was the thing that people did back then, is they all helped each other build their houses, which was pretty cool. You know, there was no, like, hiring a contractor or anything like that, you know. And I guess the main house was designed by an architect friend of my parents, so there wasn't an actual some plans to it. So the, like, main house, the kids' room was like two steps down, and there's a balcony, and then there's the tower, which is where the parents eventually moved. And then parents got divorced in the 80s. It was kind of an ugly divorce. They later became friends, which was good, but we wanted to live at our house. That's my dad ended up keeping the house, which I think probably happens a lot. My mom moved away. But he kept building on to the house, like building on rooms and acquiring more like artwork and baseball cards or whatever. He was a major collector of stuff. So he would just build on more rooms to basically store his stuff. But it's in pretty good shape. He always had people like helping him build after the initial build, and no plans for the house really after the initial architect. So he'd say, oh, I want this here, you know, this wall here or this room here, and they'd build it, and he'd say, oh no, that's not exactly how I want it. So they'd tear it down and then rebuild it. And they did that so often that they ended up just building in screws after a while, with using screws, because, you know, it was easier to take out part. Yeah, including my boyfriend was one of the carpenters on the house, too. He always had a lot of people at the house growing up, because, of course, he was selling stuff. So he grew and sold pot. Somehow Geraldo caught wind of this or wanted to do a series on pot in Northern California. So Geraldo Rivera was at our house in the 80s. I've got a little tiny photo, I should have brought it, of Geraldo. He's apparently a real jerk, but hey, you know, whatever. But yeah, so there's like this film crew and this one little plant in the garden. So it was pretty small scale. I think that's why I never got in trouble. It's, you know, mom and pop, basically, you know, wasn't like a 1,000 plants plantation or anything. But yeah, he's pretty happy being an outlaw. We found this letter that he'd written to one of his old girlfriends in England, you know, 40 years ago or something. And And the letter was like, you know, he was updating her on his life, that he'd built his own house using mostly recycled materials. So a lot of the old hippies tore down old barns and houses. So they, I mean, beautiful old growth redwood. Our floor is from an old barn, so it's all old growth redwood. So he's like, oh yeah, I made my house out of mostly recycled material. I'm no longer English, which is a great thing. And then he crossed it out and put it, which is a good thing, because, you know, she's English, so he didn't want to offend too much. And then I'm not American either. I'm just an outlaw, which I can live with, I think. ?
So what was it like for you being the daughter of an outlaw?
It was weird. It was like, now it's funny, but at the time it was like, it was a little bit sketchy, because like you'd come home, it was mostly guys around the house, you'd come home and there'd be like all these people at the table, and you don't know if it would be parole officer from the city coming up to buy stuff, a good old boy with his sack of moldy weed that he'd grown that was probably really bad and was coming to sell it, or like he was kind of in connected with the Mexican community too, so they would come up with stuff. And so all these people would be sitting at the table, and my dad would be like futzing about doing stuff, like not really dealing with them. So they'd be sitting there kind of having to talk to each other, which was always really funny. I mean, it's never a dull moment, that's for sure. It's like something, you know, that I realized when I moved back here from the city, like, you know, when you're in the city, you say, oh, hi, my name is so-and-so, and what do you do for a living? So I tried that when I came home, and everybody starts squirming because they don't want to, it's like, you know what they do for a living, and you just don't ask. And that was kind of like what it was like growing up. Like, there's no, like, what does your dad do for a living? I mean, there was definitely, like, straight people in Mendo whose parents owned restaurants and people or stores or something, or the gas station, like the Matsons. So, like, my dad had this kind of tainted reputation because of it. So that kind of trickled down to us a bit. You know, like, sometimes you could tell parents didn't want their kids to come over to our house. Like, later on, after the divorce, it was kind of like, yeah, you can come over to our house, but we're not sending our kid, you know. And then when I went to the city and would meet people and tell people what my dad did, they'd be like, oh, that's so cool. And you're like, wow, yeah, okay, yeah, I guess so. But it didn't seem too weird here. I mean, I knew, I was trained early on that you don't talk about it. Like, even on the phone, you don't say the name on the phone. Just in case somebody's listening. You know, I don't know.
I want to circle back to being a kid. You were talking about how you were playing without any boundaries and you could just run free, but that you also worked. So what kind of, what did that entail for you? Like, what kinds of chores did you have to do when you were a kid?
We had to feed the rabbits. We raised rabbits. I guess that was one of my dad's legit businesses. He always had to have something. As a parent, so he would raise bunnies and we would feed them. Well, sometimes we would have to help kill them, which I didn't like doing, but my sister and him would skin them and sell them to the local, actually Harbor House, I think, and some of the other local hotels back in the day. And then dishes, although we mainly use paper plates, which is pretty handy. Less dishes. Like, after the divorce, there was definitely a lot less structure. We didn't, like, you know, sit down and eat together. It was, like, chips and salsa and ramen noodles for dinner, you know, because it was, like, being raised by dad, you know? Bachelor. Yeah, things got a little bit crazy. But luckily, I have an older sister who was kind of like a parent. Where my parents sort of fell down on their parental duties, she stepped in, so I think we're lucky we had that too, or else who knows what would happen. Yeah, I don't know. I think they were trying to rebel against the strict society and their strict upbringing. So they just went like completely the other way. Like, okay, do whatever you want, basically. Like, you know, I would ask my dad or tell him, oh yeah, I don't know if I'm going to come home tonight or something like that. Or should I come home tonight? Oh, you know, do whatever you want, you know, so.
So do you feel like you were brought up with a particular set of values?
Yeah, and it's funny because I was dating this Cypriot guy who's Greek Orthodox. And I remember him turning to me and saying, even though you're not religious, you're like a good person, you know? I think our parents just taught us to be open and accepting and not to be racist, or even though, of course, Mendocino's super white, that's one thing. Obviously, you don't get a lot of diversity here, but we weren't taught to be, you know, prejudiced against other people. And then, of course, in a small town, you kind of have to be more polite, I guess, because, you know, you're going to see these people again. You know, you got to live together somehow. So, whereas in the city, you can pretty much just do whatever you want. No accountability. Although it was funny, when I was in college, I was kind of experimenting with, like, girls and stuff. And both my parents were like, oh, no, this is just a phase. They got all NIMBY on me. I was like, whoa. It was just funny because I thought, oh, anything goes, you know, but no. So I thought that was kind of funny because it kind of like challenged their beliefs or whatever.
So do you feel like you got values from your parents that you're passing on to your own kids? I understand you have a 1-year-old now.
Yeah, I guess the main thing is the sense of community, and yeah, just being open to other people and not, you know, pointing at somebody and saying, oh, you know, like not instilling any prejudices on her, or at least not trying not to. And then I try to stay pretty active in the community. Like if there's nothing going on, then I'll make something. Like, I mean, not as much now, it's harder with the kid, but you know, like movie nights. So I would show some of the old hippie, you know, country mama films, and then do like a trivia night, you know, and people got into it like every month or so, a couple months, and potluck. People are really good at potlucks here. And then, you know, have like a Christmas party. It's a really great community up here, really nice, good people. And, you know, it's not like you have to hang out with them every day, but, you know, getting them out, getting people together. That's the only thing about living here again is the isolation. I lived in San Francisco for 16 years, and I like to be around people, and I like to be able to walk to a coffee shop and run into people that I know, and or just talk to strangers, you know, anybody really knows. But yeah, obviously you got to drive half an hour, 20 minutes, an hour to go anywhere. And if we don't leave the house, then she only sees me and Larry when he's not working. So I don't know. She loves people. So I want to make sure that she's not isolated. That's the only thing. Yeah.
When did you come back to Elk?
Yeah, I moved back 2009 for a couple of years. Kind of followed a guy back, but I wanted to get out of the city anyways. Started working with the state parks, and then ended up moving up to Humboldt for another park job for about 4 years. And then my boyfriend and I moved here almost 3 years ago. Yeah, we lost our first baby. We were planning on moving up here to raise her, but we lost her at birth, November 2015, and then we ended up moving back here anyways. And yeah, because I thought this would be a good place to raise a kid, and then luckily we were able to have another one, and so we've been here for almost 3 years. Yeah, and we just decided to stay, and we have a free place to stay, which helps, because finding work and making money here is difficult. And if we didn't have this place to live, there's no way we could afford to live here. So yeah, we're lucky that my parents got this little 10 acres crown jewel little home, just to be able to have that home's important.
One of the things you said just now reminded me of something that's come up a lot with your parents' generation, where they say, oh, things were so affordable and we were so lucky. I could just have like some little rinky-dink part-time job and buy a place and be able to hang out with my friends. And it sounds like that's something that's changed a lot for your generation.
Yeah, it definitely seems, from what I've heard, people talk about the old days when the cost of living was much lower, you could actually buy a place, and yeah, you didn't have to struggle with five jobs and crazy rent prices. I mean, yeah, it's crazy. I don't know how, yeah, I mean, if we didn't have this edit, we would definitely have a lot more stress in our lives, so I know, and I wouldn't be able to stay at home, with my kid. I'd have to put her in daycare, and I don't know, there's kind of like us old people who are like holding on to these properties that we'd never be able to afford to buy now, and then you have the new retirees coming in with money, so there's stratification again, and a lot less kids, of course. I mean, there used to be 30 kids that were going to school K through 5 here, and now there's a preschool and they have like 12 kids or something. And then, yeah, so I mean, there's a little growth spurt, I guess, in Elk right now, but, and that's part of it, like, too, being a mom, like, you gotta like schedule play dates. Like, I don't remember my parents ever doing stuff like that. It was just like, oh, I'm dropping my kids off at your house or whatever. Or, the neighbors would just walk over,
Well, is there any particular memory that's especially emblematic of your life as a basically a second generation back to the lander?
Actually, yeah, the cook here used to make these like carob balls with dried fruit and nuts and stuff, and I thought it was pretty nasty, but we definitely didn't grow up with, soda and McDonald's and junk food. And so in that way, it's hard to relate to a lot of other Americans anywhere east to the coast. Yeah. I just liked, when we were kids, there was all kinds of, like, there was a talent show. This guy would sing opera and crush donuts on his chest, There was this like crazy stuff, like Great Day in Elk, like crazy floats. It just seems a lot tamer now, even, than it was when we were kids. Like, there was like a circus. It just seems like a lot tamer now, for better or worse. I don't know.
You've been listening to Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. I'm Sarah Reith. We just heard from Annika Williams, whose parents met in Elk in 1969. For all our interviews, plus photos and extended versions, search Promise of Paradise at kzyx.org. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, the Mendocino Institute, Story Center, and the Grace Hudson Museum.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.